Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from just outside of New York City from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
I'm just watching the current season of Wrexham Till I Die. And it's kind of interesting. Very interesting, in fact. And I remember just a few episodes ago, there was the issue that caused real problems for Rob and Ryan was Paul Mullen's boots, which had emblazoned upon them a derogatory comment about the Tories. And I thought, huh. And then I thought about the weekend just past. They've signed James McLean, who asked a Mansfield Town fan on to fight him, more or less, tell him come onto the field during their cup game at the weekend. When I just think about how upset Rob and Ryan were about that whole incident, did they have any idea who they were signing? Obviously, McLean doesn't wear the poppy during the month of November. It's caused consternation amongst a certain section of English society during his career. For a man very open about his political persuasions, I can't wait for next season, though. Next season of Wrexham Till I Die.
I don't know if I told you, I saw Ryan Reynolds on the street in Manhattan.
You did?
Oh, about a week and a half ago.
Yeah. How far away would you say he was?
I mean, how far are you when you walk by a person?
Wow.
A foot? Several inches? I don't know.
I
was walking one way down the sidewalk, and he and another guy were coming in my direction. I stared at him uncomfortably. We did lock eyes momentarily. He's a gorgeous, gorgeous man.
Uh-huh. And you never thought, hey, sorry, Ryan. Hi, I'm Andrew Gundling. I have a very popular soccer podcast. I would absolutely love to talk to you about Wrexham.
I did. I did say all those things.
No, you wouldn't.
I did. I interviewed him already. It's from. I'm starting it on a separate venture. I was trying to keep it hidden.
But listen, there's too much to discuss on this podcast about football for me to get just tied up in my disappointment at your just lack of social skills.
That's your takeaway, huh? You had to make it about yourself. Couldn't be, oh, wow, cool. What a neat New York celebrity sighting. No. How can I make this about
sighting? Sighting? What does that mean? It means nothing. God, you saw someone. Unless you interact. Yeah. Well,
it was a sighting. Like you're in the wild.
Like Bigfoot. although in New York, there's celebrities everywhere. So what?
That's a big one, though. That's a notable one. That's a notable one.
It's not notable when you do nothing about it.
I saw him, and now I get to have that moment. What a show. Right. What a show this is going to be. I don't even know what to do with some of what we've seen over the last few days in the Premier League.
I know what to do with Arsenal.
Absolute madness. What's going on?
I know what to do with Arsenal and Newcastle. I can figure that out. I know exactly what to do with it. It wasn't even that good of a game, to be honest with you.
You're right, actually. I do have concrete thoughts on that one. Full disclosure, we're recording this. It's late Monday night. I only just finished watching Tottenham and Chelsea. You were literally waiting for me to finish watching it for us to start recording. So I'm still in it emotionally. What an absolutely ridiculous game of football. I don't know what to make of it really for either team. I'm so curious to see specifically, look, for Chelsea, they won 4-1. Their striker, who has been maligned for all of this season up to this point, registered a hat trick. And yet I don't know what they take from this. I don't know. I mean, other than the fact that it's 3 points against maybe their biggest rival in Pochettino's return to face his old club, like obviously those are all good things. But aside from those things, I don't know exactly what Chelsea Pochettino looked anguished through most of this game, through the second half when they're up two men after Destiny Udogi ridiculously in a moment of madness for him, got himself sent off with a absolute second yellow. But Chelsea's, again, they scored four goals. I know that like that's what matters. The score is what matters, but they, I mean, my God, at one point, JJ, when the game went to stoppage time, you know, there's 9 minutes of stoppage time in the second half. It was still 2-1 at that point, but it felt like there were like three big chances in the second half since Tottenham went down to 9. And it felt like two of them were for Tottenham with Dyer scoring and having it chalked off for a narrow offside. And then Bentancur almost inexplicably missing a header from 2 feet out. I mean, I get the ball was moving at a real quick pace and it was hard for him to get his head down on it in time, but he probably should have scored.
If you were to settle on what Ryan O'Hanlon came up with on Twitter, Ryan of ESPN, he said, "This is the worst I've ever seen a team play with 9 men and the worst I've ever seen a team play against 9 men. If you want to go with that, I think that's okay to go with. And also, you know, I'm getting destroyed by some Chelsea fan who's a long-term listener. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, I called him a wanker. I shouldn't have done that. Oh, but like, I'm getting destroyed about things I haven't said yet on the podcast. You're going to be negative about Chelsea, you know. I'm sorry. Like, I've been nothing but positive about Chelsea. I picked them to be challenging for the fifth position. If you listen, go back to our previews. I thought Poch would get them into fifth. They've been nothing but abject since that prediction. Also, even when we've had a Chelsea guest on, when we did the In the Club, the guy came on and explained £1 billion of spending in 12 months under Todd Bowley. He explained it away as inflation. And I said nothing. So I have been so nice to
Chelsea. You've been sitting on that one for a while, though.
Oh, Christ almighty. Like, I mean, the fact I didn't say anything was just out of a pure kindness to the guy because, you know, he was good enough to give us his time. I didn't really feel like destroying him when, you know, he took time out of his day. But like the idea that I've been anything other than generous to this faltering is even kind Chelsea team. They won the game. Like, I would have loved to have seen this game develop and keep going 11-11, but Tottenham have what can only be described as Romero is a,
he's a maniac.
Time bomb.
He's an absolute maniac. Look, when he's.
And Destiny Udogie is just so raw and inexperienced. Like in that second half, he's coming back. He's chasing back. He makes a great defensive play. It was good defending. All he has to do is stay on his feet. He doesn't have to go in on Sterling. It goes to ground. It's just stupid. Second yellow, off you go. And then the game is crazy because, you know, Postecoglou has decided, I have two ways I'm going to die here. I'm going to die by my principles, or I'm going to die in a way that Conte or Mourinho would have died. And he decides to die by his principles and almost gets away with it because Chelsea are not good at finishing chances.
But
now they're even worse against a low block. But for him to choose to be a low block in that scenario and play on the counter was too much of a concession to circumstance, and he wanted to stay true to what he believes in. What did he say after the game? It's what we do, mate, or something like that. You know, like that. I mean, you can criticize either decision. I mean, it gave Spurs a launching pad to still have attacks. Can we listen? By the way, I'm not the only one that thought Chelsea were like almost going to fluff their lines here. I mean, there's not people thinking this would be hilarious if Tottenham draw this and Chelsea don't win. Like, utterly hilarious. I wasn't the only person thinking this. If you're going to attack me, listen to Chelsea TV. Listen to what they had to say at 2-1.
Son passed his assist. Sanchez saves and spares the Chelsea blushes for now, but for how much longer?
They were finding this just a tad embarrassing. And it was all the more embarrassing by the incredible line that Spurs had decided to play, a defensive line. The 0-7-1 formation, as Football 365 described it as, against Mudrick and Sterling. Like, and look, Chelsea in the end, they made it look good 4-1. If you didn't see the game, you're like, oh, that's comprehensive. No, it wasn't. And that doesn't mean that Chelsea don't kick on from this and be brilliant all season. But like, you know, like, do people just listen to a podcast to hear nice things about their club? Like, is that what they do? Like, Christ, it's exasperating. It's so frustrating. Like, I come into this, I do my absolute friggin' best. I do my best. If a team's playing crap or I think they play crap, I'll tell you that. I'll tell you Liverpool at the weekend, I don't care about their XG. They went to Luton and drew 1-1. They were poor. They should have won the game. They didn't. But everyone just wants to be soothed and like defend ownership. And we had another yerk over the weekend complaining about our coverage of Barcelona, like saying that it was a fall from grace that they have to now chill out for like decrepit bands from the 60s. Yeah, okay, that's a comment. You don't have to jump to your, it's not an attack on everything the club's ever stood for. Anyway, back to this game. It was such a crazy game. It was lunacy. I just would have loved to have seen it 11v11.
Well, of course.
Because it did become, I mean, it was, it's a choice by Postecoglou.
It was a freak show. It was an utter freak show, JJ. I want to go through these things one thing at a time. The first thing that you mentioned, Romero. I mean, look, I've sounded off on this before. He's a brilliant player. It's no accident that he was a starting center back for Argentina winning the World Cup. You know, it's no accident that he's an assistant captain for this Tottenham side. He's great, but he's out of his mind. He goes through these moments where he loses sight of reality. I talked about it last year when Tottenham got bounced by AC Milan in the second leg. They're down one goal and he gets two horrible yellows to get sent off in a game where Spurs only needed one. Like he just has these moments where he just sees white. Like it all goes blank for him. And he could have been, he was lucky. Like that's the thing that drives me crazy. He kicks Levi Colwill in an act of total petulance, gets away with it. You would think, oh, okay, there was my mulligan for this one. Let's better settle down. And then it's a minute, 2 minutes later, he's still seeing white. He hasn't come back to reality yet. And look, some of those red cards are different. And like, that's one where sometimes I'll feel a little bit bad for a player when he's going through, like when it happens on a follow through of trying to clear a ball from out of your box, that's not the same necessarily as going into a tackle. But when it's him and you've only just done what you did a minute earlier, you lose the benefit of the doubt. And it's absolutely a red. And you know, it's tough for Tottenham because they would have been better off just having the Caicedo goal count. Yeah. But now it's got to get looked at. And so with that, now the red gets seen. It's a red and a penalty. And the game spirals from there. Now,
can I ask you something?
Yeah.
And I'm jumping ahead just a little bit. But
I want to go to the Postecoglou decision next. I don't know if that's where you're going.
Okay, I'll go to that. I'll tighten my sphincter. I'll hang on.
Okay. So what you were talking about with Ange, look, I love what he has done for this club. What you said about his, what was it that he said? This is what we do, mate.
This is who we are.
This is who we. I do admire that. But
I don't know.
But at a certain point, if you know we're going to lose this game, like maybe his mindset was, I don't care what we decide to do here. I know that we're going to lose. So maybe the way for me to lose this game is with our dignity and for our players to feel pride in our system and the way we want to do things. We'll lose the battle, but this is to win the war. If that was his mindset, then okay, fine. But if it was, I believe this is our best course of action to try to get something from this game, then I just will. I can love him and I can disagree with him vehemently at the same time. If their strategy was, we're going to allow Chelsea to have 25 fast breaks in the next 35 minutes of this game and assume that we're going to stop all of them, well, you're wrong. You're just wrong. And well, that's okay.
So like, JJ Bull, a different JJ on Twitter from T4 Football, he did a thread. I kind of see what he's saying. So he's like, look, the only way we can get back into this or stay in this game as a football game, as an attacking entity, is to play that high line. That's how we play. That's how we have to set up, even with nine. And what we're going to do is Vicario is going to sweep in behind. Now, for a long time, some of it to Chelsea's,
Chelsea looked very frustrated by it. It worked part of the time, but that was never like that's not sustainable. There was one point, JJ, where Vicario had like his fourth sweeper keeper moment, and I looked up, I was like, okay, this is kind of working. And then I looked up, it was the 64th minute.
They're not going to
do this for another 25 minutes. This is going to break. They're going to score goals. You can't just rely on stopping breakaway after breakaway after breakaway. It's ridiculous. I admire it. There's part of me that admires it because he's a man of principle. And like I said, if his goal was to lose the battle but win the war, that's fine. But if it was to win this game or get a point from this game, then it was wrong.
Well, I mean, the cheers by the 50,000 at the end of the game. Have you ever heard?
Well, because they worked their asses off. Like they played. Yeah, I mean, it's as hard as nine guys can play, and I think the fans appreciated the effort that they put in.
I honestly think though, in your heart of hearts. There's no other way you can be if you're being serious. You would have taken 11v11 and take a thrashing from Chelsea and just forget about it and get it out of the road. If the deal is take your hammering in normal circumstances, but those injuries, Andrew.
Well, they're kill. I mean, this is so.
I mean, Jesus, that's the thing. We can all luxuriate over peak Barclays content here. You know, we really can. But there's the story for Spurs is this result against your rivals, returning manager, etc. It shouldn't be a killer blow for so many reasons, but it will be not because of the scoreline, but because of those injuries. I mean, Van der Ven's.
That's the one. I mean, look, James Maddison, we'll see what that one is. He got hurt, stayed in for a few minutes, then came out. I don't know. I haven't seen yet what they're saying about that.
Ankle or knee?
I don't know. Here's what we do know. We know Christian Romero, one half of this center back pairing, which has been very good, regardless of what he did today, has been excellent this season. We know he's gone for three games. Wolves, Villa, City. Romero, gone. And then what we know is that Mickey van de Ven, who quietly, in a year where James Maddison has been spectacular and where Guglielmo Vicario has been maybe the best goalkeeper signing so far of the season, I think there's been this conversation going around I've seen on Twitter a little bit of Spurs fans debating who Tottenham's most important player has been. And van de Ven seems to be the guy who had been winning that argument among Tottenham fans because of the way he plays in the back and it allows them to do so much up front, because it's rare for a center back to also be that fast. And so he does have this ability to make up so much of the ground behind them. And so they can play higher up. For him to pull up the way that he did, I mean, I looked at that and I said, that's 4 months. I mean, we'll see in March, April. I don't know. But that looked so bad. I'm not a doctor. I'm just going off of what I saw and my own negativity. The way he grabbed it, he couldn't walk off the field. Like that to me felt like
the
worst possible muscle tear, which oftentimes involves surgery. And by the time you're listening to this, maybe we'll know. But like, so all bare minimum, we know that their center back duo of Romero and van de Ven are gone for at least three games, van de Ven beyond that. Madison probably, I don't know, one or two. I don't know what, I mean, Tottenham are already a little bit thin in the back since Ben Davies was out for this game. Like, I don't know what they're, Højbjerg was basically playing center back for them tonight and did quite a good job for a lot of this game. But like Eric Dier hadn't played a second until tonight.
Well,
he's starting for them again. Like that's where they're at.
He becomes, and look, he's played a kind of a, you know, we've seen social media coming out of Tottenham where he's like, what was that thing where on it was on like a Thursday or a Friday, they're coming into training.
Yeah, and they're asking the guys what their music they were listening to or something like that. And
what they're wearing or something.
Yeah, something like that. And he's like, oh, I know you're not going to use this anyway. Like, it was kind of sad. It was
there's
sad.
A hangdog looking like his time's up. Now you can argue he becomes their most important player because, well, Madison's not replaceable. That's the other thing. But assuming Madison is short term and comes back and it's a rolled ankle or something like that, assuming Madison comes back in, like Dier becomes their most important player because that's an area they just, the next three games, they're going to have to figure something out without Romero. But Dier becomes their most important player because he has to be good. He just has to be good.
Yeah, and look, Bentancur being back now is obviously enormous. You know what I think of that guy. So that's not that there's ever a good time for your best attacking midfielder to get hurt, but Bissouma, Bentancur, Sarr is still a good midfield, a really good midfield. But yeah, the center back situation is that was a disaster for Tottenham tonight. That's the one thing that couldn't happen to them that did. We'll see where they go, where both of these teams go now. Tottenham, for everyone who's been waiting for reality to hit them, this is now that fork in the road, and we'll find out which way they go, because this was not a good, I mean, whatever good feelings you might have coming out of it about them and how hard they played, once you step back and the dust settles from that, it's a 4-1 loss to a rival where you lost maybe your two most important players to injury, and another one of them for three games to a red card. So which way do they go now? Is the system so great under Ange that it's next man up and they'll be all right? Or are they screwed? We'll find out. As for Chelsea, I mean, look, we can say all we want that we don't know what to make of this because they were playing against nine men and they didn't play particularly well. But JJ, I say all the time, like in basketball, when a guy is struggling, sometimes he just, however meaningless it might be,
needs something.
He just needs to see a free throw go in. He just needs to get an uncontested layup and watch the ball go through the net. Nicholas Jackson has been one of the most criticized signings of the season so far for all clubs, not just Chelsea. He registered a hat trick tonight. However you want to spin it, in his mind, he registered a hat trick tonight. Doesn't matter what anybody else thinks.
Okay.
For a player who was in desperate need of confidence, he sees a 3 on the board next to his name for goals scored. That's big. That's big. And so we'll see where Chelsea goes from here.
Did you see someone put out a video and it's Eriksen, final game of the season for Manchester United after the game when they let the players on the field with their wives and families, and his little kid is kicking the ball, you know, Christian Eriksen and his wife are holding hand by hand, and the kid is kicking the ball into the empty net, which they always do. And it's just taken forever for the kid to do it, like forever. It has to be guided towards the goal and keep it straight in line. And someone said, Nicholas Jackson versus Tottenham, you know, that, you know, that's the way that hat trick has kind of been viewed by the nature of that game. It reminded me, you know, when we used to coach, we do training sessions, and it's actually germane to your point, where you'd have 4v3 attacking or 5v3 attacking, and, you know, overloads and stuff like that. And there was always three defenders who were isolated. And the idea was to isolate, was to have success for the attackers so they can bring that on into the game. Mm-hmm. You know, there's nothing like repetition of success to bring onto the field then in a real game, but you always felt bad for the goalkeepers and the defenders because the drill is designed for them to be the fall guys. And so in a way, maybe this is the perfect thing for Nicholas Jackson. Now gets his, like you said, gets his confidence up, gets it running, you know, gets him in a frame of mind where he goes out and scores goals against other teams. Talk, thought Cole Palmer was good for them. Like, I mean, he had won. I actually, on the Odoge sending off, it was a poor pass by him, allowed Odoge to recover, and then the ball runs away from Odoge, and he just makes that just unnecessary. Yeah, unnecessary tackle. But I thought he was, I think he might actually turn out to be, I was fairly critical of the signing because it was such a lot of money for a guy who had not substantial senior minutes for City, but he might turn out to be actually a bit more mature than his years and may turn out to be a good investment amongst many, 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 many investments for Chelsea. Yeah. I was reading Football 365 after the game because sometimes you need to read somebody else to like kind of focus your own thoughts. And one of their points was how hard, like what you're saying, how hard it is to actually get a read on Chelsea from this game, because everything that they did was somehow brought about by a Tottenham action. The sendings off, the crazy high line that they were playing, all of this was Tottenham making them do things either because of Tottenham's lack of personnel or because of Tottenham's tactical changes. Like, there's no way any other coach I can think of would see Sterling and Mudrick and think, right, I've got nine men, I'm going to go as high as I can.
It's bonkers. It's crazy.
It's bonkers. It is. It just wouldn't happen. They dig in and then they try to play on the break, but maybe Ange thought that would bring back triggering memories for the 50,000 there of Conte and Mourinho, and maybe he just really wants to distance the club entirely from that whole shambles. So like, so much of what Chelsea did was influenced by Tottenham punching themselves in the face. Or you know, tactically punching themselves in the face. I still believe Pochettino is a good manager. I still believe he can get something right at Chelsea. I think the thing is, what happens when, like, say, okay, Chelsea, I mean, it's going to be hard to get, I mean, they have Man City next, and then they have Newcastle. So, like, you know, those are difficult games to get a Brighton, United. Okay, I'm going to fast forward to December 10th. There may not be too many wins in there. But like against Everton, we know how Everton are going to play. That's exactly the team that Chelsea will struggle against. Not that they'll dominate the game. They'll be good. They'll be definitely the team that creates the chances. But Everton will be low block. Like, that's the kind of game that you'll get a better read of how they've progressed. Can they break down those teams? Because they should be higher up the table than they are.
Sure.
Tonight's just... Yeah, it's not one of those games where I can come away and say conclusively I know they're trending in the right way. It's great to win that game, but they should absolutely be winning that game considering the circumstances.
Crazy game. 5 goals scored total, 3 others chalked off for various VAR reviews, 21 minutes of stoppage time combined from the first half and second half, just and 2 rivals duking it out on a Monday night in North London. Crazy, crazy stuff.
Can we just listen to Ange? Because Ange, this is just Ange's comments about referees and VAR and where we are in the game right now. And I think they're worth listening to as we head into the next game that we're going to talk about.
Any complaints at all about the Romero red or the Odoge red?
No, I've already said that, you know, that's whatever decision they've made. At some point, we've got to accept the referee's decision. You know, that's how I grew up. Yeah. And I keep saying that, and I said that last time, you know. This constant erosion of referees' authorities, well, this is where the game's going to get. They're not going to have any authority, and it's going to get diminished. And we're going to be in the control of somebody a few miles away watching a TV screen. So decision's a decision, you know. You either accept it or you don't. I've always been in the camp. You accept it. Trust me, in 26 years, I've had plenty of bad ones. I've had plenty that have fallen in my favour. It is what it is.
I mean, those are my sentiments.
It's kind of echoing with what they were saying at halftime, too. I forget if it was Robbie Musto or whoever it was, basically saying that this is where, like, I think it was Robbie Musto who said, look, VAR, they got everything right, but at what cost is kind of what he was saying. And I think that's sort of what Ange is saying, too. It was like,
yeah,
you know, this is where we're headed, where it's going to be some guy somewhere else coming to these decisions. And so with that, let's move from Tottenham Chelsea over to Arsenal Newcastle.
Oh, Christ.
Where Arsenal, they lose 1-0 to Newcastle, and Mikel Arteta loses his mind. There's a lot to come out of this one. I've got it kind of broken down into a couple different things here. Let's just start with what, of course, was the biggest moment, and that's this controversial Newcastle goal, which proved to be the winner. Mm. So the question is, should it have counted? If not, which of the three elements that were all being reviewed for it was the one that should have chalked it off? Now, for me, I'm fine. Like, going through those elements, the first one being, did the ball go out? I'm fine with the ruling being that it did not. We've seen that before. I don't care what the space appeared to be between the ball and the end line. We all know now that that's not necessarily indicative. We saw it in Qatar between Spain and Japan, where we all thought that went out, but then you see the overhead view. Turns out it didn't. You play to the whistle. Joe Willock did, and he was rewarded ultimately for it. I'm fine with that part being allowed to continue. The offside, I mean, look, there's a lot of cameras in that place. There wasn't one to conclusively tell you whether or not that was an offside. It's unfortunate, but what are you going to do? That's it. So there's nothing more. I don't know how you argue it. Like, you can't call offside if you can't see whether or not the ball was being played at the point where there was an offside player. So I'm fine with that as well. I don't know what else to do with that. Then finally, the push on Gabriel. This is the one where I think if you wanted to chalk that goal off, this is the one you would point to. Now, here's where I come down on it. I think it is too, but I will at least say it's close. So I was reading Dale Johnson, ESPN FC's officiating expert. He says this. He says the freeze frame images look damning, but in real time, it doesn't look anywhere near as incriminating. Indeed, on the initial replays, few people seem to think there was even a foul to look at. It's a borderline decision for VAR to overturn. Some will think this is definitely a foul. Others that there's not enough in it. Is it clear and obvious? Arteta at least has a case on this, but the series of events on the goal didn't warrant the response from Arsenal. So here's where I come down on it. I think I agree with you. I think I've seen it. It's hard to ignore the freeze frames. I think it's a foul. But JJ, what Dale Johnson is saying here, where he says the freeze frame images look damning, but in real time, it doesn't look anywhere near as incriminating. Isn't this kind of what I know? This is sort of what you have specifically have been talking about. You talk all the time about the deceptiveness. People send me screenshots that they send you. Like, you have to allow things to happen in real time. It was a close play. It was a subjective call. They went with what they had on the field. Like, I don't see it. Again, I probably think it's a foul, but it's not so egregious to me. It's not some great injustice that, like, what I'm getting at is the reaction from Arteta and Arsenal was absurd to me. This was a crazy emotional reaction. And look, I understand Mikel Arteta's frustration. He throws a temper tantrum afterwards. He said it's not a goal. For many reasons, it's not a goal. For more than one reason, at least, it's not a goal. And there's too much at stake here. We put so much effort. It's so difficult to compete at this level. It's a disgrace. I feel embarrassed. More than 20 years in this country, nowhere near the level to describe this as the best league in the world. Like, I mean, it's a subjective call. And Mikel Arteta is the same guy who, after the Liverpool incident against Spurs, which we can all agree was far more egregious than however egregious this was. You know what Arteta's quote was after that when he was asked about that? Quote from Mikel Arteta, "We need to understand that mistakes happen." Unquote. Wow. Yep. Changing our tune a bit, are we now? Like, it's just over the top. And it's not a situation for Arsenal to have to release a statement about this.
Oh, embarrassing.
Like their embarrassing. Own manager said after the Liverpool game, for one of the most egregious mistakes we've ever seen from an officiating standpoint, we need to understand that mistakes happen. You don't release statements for an officiating mistake that, by the way, may not have even been an actual mistake. I mean, give me a break with this stuff. I mean, these guys, like, see, this is why VAR is going to go away. I don't know if it's going to go away. Maybe we've crossed the point of no return, but like, it's going to go away because these guys, it's a thing now where we're in a pile on moment, and Arsenal releasing statements about a subjective call not going their way. Like, this is where it's at. And this stuff is just going to keep happening. The outrage has now reached the point where teams, this has become easy now for teams to just pick on this and pile on this thing. Everyone hates it. We'll score points with our people. This to me was, I understand his frustration, but like, enough with some of this.
I just don't think the statement's embarrassing. Liverpool, when they issued their statement after the VAR thing, was utterly embarrassing. You know, I remember Liverpool had this threatening lawyer speak at the end of theirs. Arsenal's is just pointless, like utterly pointless. Liverpool at least had some menace. Oh, we're going to do something. Arsenal's was like, Arsenal Football Club wholeheartedly supports Mikel Arteta's post-match comments after yet more unacceptable refereeing and VAR errors on Saturday evening. Blah, 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 blah. We support the ongoing efforts of Chief Refereeing Officer Howard Webb and would welcome working together to achieve the world-class officiating standards our league demands.
Oh.
Like, it's a nothing. It's just like nothing. It's a fart of violent rage from both of them. And it's not a disgrace. It's not. I mean, if you want to bring it back to the football just for 1 second, Arsenal didn't do enough to win that game.
Well, yeah. How about releasing the statement about one shot on target or a 0.6 XG that they had? Where's the statement on that?
Yeah, I knew they were losing this game when Declan Rice had that header. It was bouncing up and I thought he was shaping to head it and he heads it past the post instead of going to the right of the goalkeeper. And I was like, Arsenal are struggling to get any kind of chances here. In the context of the game, that's a big chance. And if they don't take it, it's easy for Newcastle, who have become these dogs of war under Eddie Howe. Eddie Howe had comments before the game about, do you know who he's speaking to? But I read them, and it was about how he's upset when he finished at Bournemouth that people thought he was a manager that had nice teams that play nice football, but they couldn't defend, which was kind of the case at Bournemouth. And he took that to heart, and he used his time off to kind of create this hybrid Diego Simeone style outfit that actually can play good football, but are also like well versed in the dark arts and time wasting and in some cases good defending too. But like Arsenal didn't do enough to win that game, and I don't know, like just to parrot Poch again, I would say one thing. I think people should get on with this, you know. You've lost the game. Could have been a foul. All right. Ball, was it out? There's nothing conclusive to say it was out or it was in. We just don't know. We really don't know. One thing about that, I don't understand why all boundary lines aren't covered by Hawkeye. I mean, this league is dripping in cash. Yeah, it wouldn't be expensive. If we've goal line technology that works real well, we can have a Hawkeye system in as well, and we'd know for sure. Just on the boundaries, just cover yourself on that. But like, just the incandescent rage now, and the way supporters are absolutely wound up, and they want you to think that there are bad calls, there are things I don't agree with, but that's always been the case. In fact, the things that are making it worse are these microscopic screenshots, this attention to mind-numbing detail. I mean, you saw how long the VAR checks took tonight in Chelsea-Tottenham. That is a direct result of referees and officials now being scared, making sure everything is 1,000% right, because right. We can't handle the brattish, childish response. And it's almost always from the bigger clubs. Almost always from the bigger clubs, from your Liverpools and your Arsenals. Mm-hmm. I know they carry the most support and the most noise on social media, but what supporters now want is something football's never had, and it is the complete and accurate adjudication of the game. It's never been like this. Okay? There's no utopia. There's no Xanadu where all these calls are got correct. You have to get on with it. It's imperfect. And sometimes it's going to screw your team. I don't even think this is a screwing situation. I don't.
Yeah.
I think if the referee wanted to say, you know what, on review, I think that was a foul by Jean Linton on Gabriel. Fair enough. But I don't know. What about your goalkeeper in that whole incident? But Raya didn't look very clever there. How is he beyond the ball? you know, waving a hand in the air like he's hailing a cab. I'm sick and tired of talking about decisions and not talking about football.
Yeah,
I really am. And this, and I know that game didn't give you much football to talk about. It really didn't. But I think if you look at it in football terms, Arsenal were poor. Did that mean they deserved to lose? Maybe not.
We need to understand that mistakes happen. He said that after the Luis Diaz VAR catastrophe.
But on a
subjective borderline foul, we're releasing statements. I mean, like, it's just
a complete breakdown of the VAR ridiculous system of communication in VAR is a mistake that we just need to accept. Whereas a couple of, you know, it's a hissy fit.
My last two things on this VAR stuff. The first one is I'm kind of parroting a line that I've said before on previous podcasts about this situation similar to this. You know, like the hissy fit, you're right. Mikel Arteta, I think, is one of those managers who is prone to this. He's one of many. I'm not just singling him out. Klopp is one. You know, there's a bunch of these guys who are like this. And you just know that, like, in this situation, if VAR didn't exist, Arteta would have been holding that same press conference demanding that this is why we need VAR. We have the technology. Why are we not employing it? That ball went out of play. This is not right. This is an injustice. The same statements would have been released. So I almost don't even see it as a VAR issue. And like what you mentioned also, JJ, about the problem is keep VAR, get rid of VAR. None of it matters anymore. As long as we live in an instant replay world, this is the reality that we're in. There is going to be this micro officiating from fans online, from media members, screenshots, no matter what. Like this is the reality. So we can either continue to talk about it no matter what the future is for this sport from an officiating perspective, or you just kind of ignore the noise and just understand what Mikel Arteta said after the Liverpool incident. We need to understand that sometimes mistakes happen. It's just hard for people to do that when they're seeing screenshots.
I mean, there were things that were missed in the game that were egregious, but it wasn't nothing to do with that goal. I mean, the worst decision to me was not to red card Guimarães for a forearm blow to the back of Jorginho's head. The VAR checked it and decided
Fabio
it
Vieira.
Wasn't
it Vieira?
No, it was Jorginho.
Oh, why did I think? Oh, okay.
It was Guimarães, like, just forearm into the back of the head. Like, the VAR checked it, decided it wasn't violent conduct because it was the forearm rather than the elbow. What? Like that to me is something to be absolutely. You can make the argument Newcastle should have been down to 10 men, as should Arsenal have for the Havertz tackle on Longstaff, which was reckless, out of control. And if it caught his plant foot, that's a broken leg.
Probably, yeah.
So, I mean.
Yeah. The Guimarães thing is interesting. So it's one of those things. He's a great player, that guy. He really is. But this is the kind of game and what happened with him in this game. It's the kind of thing where I think it's okay now for your view of that player to change.
Yes.
Because he had, like I said about Romero, this was a white lights moment for Guimarães where he couldn't see and it was just blind rage and he lost his mind out there. Somehow he avoided a red card. But like, the manner in which he lost control of his emotions in a few different occasions in a fairly tight window of time, specifically that forearm, which I don't know how he wasn't sent off for. I think your view of him can change now where, like, moving forward, when referees are getting ready for a game and they're in their locker room talking, like, if they're doing a Newcastle game, Guimarães is now a guy where they have to say, keep an eye on that one.
That was an unhinged performance, and the officials should have taken it in. I mean, he didn't get a yellow till what was it, after the 70th minute or later on in that?
Yeah.
Very surprising. Very surprising. And to let that go is. But it's also indicative. Like, Newcastle are much more robust now, they're much more physical. I think this is actually the first physical test I've seen Arsenal fail in a while. Because they got, like, physically they were bullied a little bit, and I know it's not there's the fear factor now. I know it's not like 1999, but I mean, I think you think of some of Patrick Vieira in particular. they're not getting away with that. Someone is going to physically stamp their authority on that now.
Well, Havertz tried to.
I suppose so. Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, violent game, busy game. Not a great game though, and again bogged down in the temper tantrums of Mikel Arteta.
Yeah,
and by the way, just in the interest of balance, just to repeat, Liverpool's statement and Jurgen Klopp talking about replays after what happened against Tottenham, that was embarrassing too. This is also embarrassing.
Yeah. Sure, we've been over that.
Yeah, no, but Andrew, trust me, you got to be clear on that. And maybe this is why both Liverpool, as we move on to Liverpool right now, yeah. Maybe those results of the weekend are why Liverpool and Arsenal won't win the league this season.
1-1 for Liverpool against Luton Town.
Mm.
And it was only 1-1 thanks to an incredibly emotional equalizer deep in stoppage time from Luis Diaz, who, upon scoring that goal, lifted up his shirt to honor his father, who is still being held captive somewhere in Colombia, with an undershirt that read, Libertad para Papa, freedom for Dad. So just to go through this before we get through to the rest of the game, the latest that I've seen with regards to Diaz's father. So the ELN is the organization claiming responsibility for the kidnapping. They have said that they do plan to release him. Reading here from the BBC, the rebel group holding Luis Diaz's father hostage has demanded, quote, security guarantees before his release. The ELN said the ongoing military and police search will delay the release and increase the risks, Colombian media reported. The ELN reiterated its intention to release Diaz's father, quote, as soon as possible. But in a statement signed by Commander Jose Manuel Martinez Quiros, it added that the current scale of the search operation undertaken by the Colombian authorities was delaying that process. Quote, we are making efforts to avoid incidents with government forces, the ELN said. The area is still militarized. They are carrying out flyovers, disembarking troops, broadcasting and offering rewards as part of an intense search operation. The situation is not allowing for the execution of the release plan quickly and safely where Mr. Luis Manuel Diaz is not at risk. If operations continue in the area, they will delay the release and increase the risk. I mean, JJ, there's more here, but I don't mean to try to get into the head of an organization that would kidnap innocent civilians. But for the love of God, what were they expecting? Did they not think that there would be some intense police and military presence to try to recover this person? Like,
And the AP News, they reported on August 3rd that Colombia's government and the National Liberation Army, or ELN, have formally begun a six-month ceasefire. Wouldn't a ceasefire include not taking civilian hostages?
You would think. One would think. Yes. What a ridiculous statement.
Hey, we're going to kidnap this guy and we're going to release him, but don't look for him while we're doing that.
Yeah.
Also,
too, I haven't seen, I don't know if you have, what was usually with kidnappings, was this a ransom kidnapping? Was there, like, what was the reason? Why? Like, why did this happen? Why were these people taken?
Well, I assumed it was ransom. Colombia's ELN justifies taking Luis Diaz's father as the economic hostage. This is from the city paper in Bogota. The ELN leader claims that Manuel Diaz is being held as an economic hostage by the guerrillas, citing that the organization's primary source of revenue come from detaining civilians. Here we go. In a video statement, Pablo Beltran cautioned Colombians that despite a bilateral ceasefire agreement reached between the ELN and the Colombian government under President Gustavo Petro, the guerrilla group did not agree to cease their detainments. So,
I mean, this is their business, JJ. Some countries are in the tourism industry, some hospitality management. They're in the kidnapping industry.
I mean, they're described as a Marxist-Leninist guerrilla insurgency group, but they're branching out, man. It's a new world. You got to diversify. Jesus Christ, how scary is this stuff?
I mean, the good part is that they have said that their intention is to release him. So I got to believe that is inevitable.
And but I still often wonder in these scenarios, like, do the risks and the downsides of kidnapping high-profile people or the families of high-profile people outweigh whatever benefits they think they'll accrue from it. Because just the eyes of the world on them now, intense scrutiny and investigation from the government forces that they've been fighting since, what, 1964 or whenever, like, so... but like Diaz's mental fortitude to go out and score a vital equalizer for Liverpool, just absolutely tremendous. Because I'm honestly, I wouldn't be able to do it. I wouldn't be able to get up. I mean, my sole focus would be worrying and concern and stress and dread.
So as for the rest of the game, which seems far more trivial, but still probably important to Diaz. I mean, it was a big moment for him. Quickly on the Luton side, because I don't want to miss that here. What a great goal that they scored in this one. Great counterattacking goal from Tahith Chong. Ross Barkley pulling the strings. How about that?
Well, this game was kind of marked by what you'd say Luton Town's thrifty recruitment. I wasn't sure about bringing Ross Barkley back to the Premier League, nor Andros Townsend.
Yeah.
But like they both performed really, really well. And Luton paid nothing for them. So that was kind of the two canny signings in Luton's best performance since the return. The signing of Chidozie Ogbene from Rotherham seems very, very good. He gave Trent Alexander-Arnold a really tough time. Like, it was basic stuff from Luton in terms of get the ball to Ogbene and then get him in behind, because they know Trent Alexander-Arnold's weakness or his positional weakness will be going the other way. And Ogbene made the inexplicable decision to try and center a ball when he was one-on-one with Alisson, when he should have just tried to slide it under him and score. So you know, Luton were... You'd give them a chance of staying up, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I mean, they're out of the relegation zone on goal difference. I don't know, man. I was impressed, and that obviously that stadium is such a throwback. The supporters in on top of them. It's you know what? If I wasn't like desperate for Liverpool to win, I would say that was a fun game.
Yeah, the away end is, I mean, it's fascinating for a lot of reasons, many of which have been documented from outside the stadium, but within the stadium. Just seeing like the number of times, like any shot that's just like a few yards over the net, it just keeps smashing into like that like siding kind of at the top of the stadium. Like it's
and comes back in.
Yeah. I don't know. There's something very like high school about it.
Yes. Yeah, it's our fight indoor soccer when you just leather it and it just bounces straight back to you.
So let's now get to the elephant in the room with this one, JJ. It was only a couple days ago where we were talking about Darwin Nunez and you were discussing the scenario of, I guess we're just going to have to live with his worldies and put up with his how in the name of God did he miss that? And this is just the Darwin Nunez existence. And sure enough, that happened.
Yeah. And I know the first surprise was that Salah is that close to goal and he's not going himself. But equally, he pops it down perfectly for Nunez, and Andrew, a top striker, just taps that home, right? He tries to hit that barrier behind the stand again, just balloons it over the bar, and it's in a game that had descended into a bit of a scrap, that would have been just that little bit of class. Like, Liverpool put together some really nice moves in the game, but never finished them. And to score that would have, I think it would have taken the air out of everything for Luton. And then Liverpool can go on. And it didn't happen. And if anything, Luton were the ones that were kind of lifted by that miss.
Yeah. Now, I do have a thought on this, because what you've said about it is right. But I was watching, I saw Steve Nichol on ESPN FC. He called what happened. He called Nunez unprofessional.
I know.
For this.
No.
Give me a break, man. Unprofessional is showing up late to training, or like what Guimaraes did, like losing your mind and just like hitting people. Like this is this is a mistake. Like, let's not, like, careful when we start throwing words around like unprofessional for simple mistakes. And furthermore, like, if you want to talk about unprofessional, I mean, you kind of glossed over it, JJ, but I'm not going to gloss over it. You know, I love Salah, and I think your friends that don't love him are out of their minds. But why is that ball coming to Nunez in the first place? What the hell happened to Mo Salah there? Why is he just not scoring that goal himself? He either passed it, which is a ridiculous decision for a proven goal scorer like him, or he mishit it from 3 yards out in front of goal, which by Steve Nichols' definition is unprofessional. Either one of those two things. What is Salah doing? Why is that ball ever even making its way to Nunez? I think that what Salah did there is just as bad as Nunez missing that opportunity.
Well, I don't want to, I mean, this could get tedious. So let's just deal with the fact that the ball bounced in a position where Nunez should absolutely score and he didn't. And it just feeds into, I think I said that, you know, he's going to score goals for you, but he's also going to miss big chances. And you wonder at the end of the season, when you add them up, where that leaves Liverpool, how that affects them. I know Ken Early said last season about him that he's a bad player in a good team, and he would be a good player in a bad team. That kind of character.
He's not a bad player. I can't look. You know, I'm Team Nunez. No. I have been. He's not a bad player, and he's not unprofessional.
Oh, he's not unprofessional. No, no, no. I mean, that's crazy. That's crazy. I don't agree with that.
He's just going to be one of these players that may frustrate until maybe he this part of his game recedes and he starts finishing more of these.
His numbers so far are good this season, so you're hoping that is an aberration, but we just know it's not.
I mean,
Jurgen, enough to know.
I saw Jurgen Klopp's press conference only a few days before this game where he was talking about how proud he is of how far Nunez has come. And so, I mean, yeah, you're going to still have to live with some of these moments, but
in the first half, there was a brilliant ball over the top from Alexander Arnold. He's running full pelt, controls it, and just flips it, and it clips the top of the crossbar. And it's a great move. And he's, you know, in that position, that's good skill, that's great run, and he's desperately unlucky. So it's, he's one of those guys. He's, again, I've become accustomed to such clinical, sleek, controlled, skillful finishing from Liverpool for so long. And now this guy is a little bit different. And I guess I have to embrace difference. What I won't embrace, Andrew, before we get off this game.
Okay.
Love that Luton are back up. I do love that stadium. I like people to be reminded that this is what football actually is for most of the country. It's not Premier League blitz and glamour. But Luton Town supporters are, a lot of them, or a large portion of them, are a disgrace. Like a genuine, not a Miguel Arteta disgrace, a real disgrace. Here's Jamie Carragher, who spoke about this on the Sky broadcast. At the start of the season, I was involved in something about tragedy chanting and supporters coming together. Carragher, this was him. It was, live on Sky. I've just heard something a couple of times in this game. Supporters have got to have rivalry, but we are better than that. A lot of clubs have been guilty of that over the years, but football fans should be better than that. That was Luton chanting, always the victims, it's never your fault, which is a reference to those that were killed in the Hillsborough disaster, and also a reference to those that were killed at Highfield Stadium disaster in 1985. This stuff is like, it is the absolute, it's the one thing, not the one thing, there are other things that supporters do that you make you want to hold your nose, but this kind of stuff is, it's just dreadful. And they're now, football clubs are now going to target supporters who are caught singing these songs. They're going to be issued bans. And I don't know quite what the hate speech laws are in England. I'd have to look into them. I'm not sure I'm comfortable about anybody being arrested for speech. But apparently this is an option now with this tragedy chanting that's happening. And whether it's Hillsborough or the Munich air disaster or the Bradford fire or whatever it is, like it is kind of, it's not kind of sick. It's really sick, a sick place for people to go to at a football game. And in fairness to Carragher, it's, I rarely hear it mentioned on a TV broadcast when it's happening. Another thing, I heard the Luton fans singing God Save the King, like just singing the national anthem, because Liverpool supporters famously, or a lot of them, consider themselves Scouse, not English, and don't like the English establishment because of the things it's done to the city. But I don't know. It was uncomfortable. Like, you could clearly hear it, particularly in the first half. Mm. And Luton have previous on this for chanting the name of a far-right fascist about 5 years ago, and their CEO had to step in and ask them not to chant that person's name. So maybe he'll step in again and say something about this. But it's just...
You would hope somebody from the club would step forward. If they haven't already.
They have in the past. It's just, it's grim. It's very, very grim.
Yeah. Let's see. A couple other Premier League notes before we take a break and come back on the other side with a couple of U.S. things, a Bayern Munich thing. Manchester United, JJ, they win yet another game in dramatic fashion where they don't play all that well. And I'm sure this will now surely spur them on to bigger and better things.
It was such a bad game. And there were two teams involved in it. I mean, Fulham, they are not the same side without Mitrovic. They're just not the same. They weren't good to watch, Andrew. And you never, I don't know, I never felt like they really carried a serious threat. But United, I didn't feel that way either. It was desperately bad to watch. And then you've got this little bit of brilliance from Bruno Fernandes. And that's what it was. Just a bit of class. First of all, we've got to admonish the Americans in this. Comedy defended from Tim Ream. Like, a comedy. And Anthony Robinson. Like someone said it was, have you ever seen that account, Crap 90s Football? Mm-hmm. Where they just show goal mouth scrambles. Guys hitting the post from like 3 yards. And it bouncing back, hitting them in the face. And it comes back and hits the crossbar and hits another guy in the face and goes into the net. This was the kind of thing that was in the lead up to it. But the finish was quality from Bruno, or the setup was. But that prompted David De Gea to do something that could have been misconstrued and was initially, but now makes sense. You are not the right captain. Zipped mouth emoji on Bruno's Instagram post showing him celebrating the goal after the game. That was in reference to Roy Keane, his comments, which were that Bruno Fernandes shouldn't be captain of Manchester United. He'd be a terrible captain to have because it was moaning and complaining. Yeah. So again, like you said before, at least United won. They won. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes you just have to find a way to stop the bleeding. And dreadful performance, dreadful game, but 3 points for United.
Yep, big 3 points, and Bruno needed that. I think it was his two. Did I see it was his 200th appearance too for the club, scoring a hugely important goal that they did desperately.
He couldn't have thought when he joined United a few years ago that this would be the period of United he was getting. I mean, oof.
Well, they do win, and it was important for them. Manchester City, they destroy Bournemouth. As Jeremy Doku just continues to ramp up his case to be considered the signing of the season. It'll go down as a goal and 4 assists for him. Kind of crazy that it wasn't 2 goals and 3 assists. Akanji got credit, obviously, for City's third, and what looked like it was Doku's second. Akanji didn't know anything about it, just hit off him. If it didn't, it might have gone wide. So it actually was probably, I mean, it's probably an important deflection off of him, but it's just funny to see. Like, he had no clue what had happened, and now, oh, I scored. How about that? So, JJ, I don't know what to make of this. Manchester City scoring 6 goals and Haaland not scoring a single one of them. Is that really, really good? Is that weirdly concerning? Is that just whatever we move on?
I think it's whatever we move on. I don't know what to read. I didn't see the game. All I saw was highlights of Doku twisting people's blood.
He's incredible. He's really incredible, this guy.
Yeah, he's been good so far. Very good. Very, very good. Yeah, yeah. I, I, I have nothing to say about this game, honestly, except to say that all of a sudden, while everybody's been floundering, while everybody's being kind of in a bit of a flux in the last few days, look at Manchester City back on top of the Premier League.
Yep. A point up on Spurs right now after Tottenham lost.
There's real fears with everything that's happened that that's how things are going to stay for the next foreseeable.
If you're a betting man,
yeah,
I would advise you to put your money on Manchester City. Yep. It is early. We'll see. I don't know. I have a lot of confidence in that statement, but yeah. JJ, one more from me here. Everton settle for a kind of a frustrating draw versus Brighton, a late own goal, wild deflection off of Ashley Young that then kind of looped over Jordan Pickford. Felt almost not quite as ridiculous, but almost a little bit Omar Gonzalez-ish Trinidad own goal. That was worse because it was like a wild swing of his leg. This just like happened to
hit
off
way further out as well.
I just mean like the way the deflection looped perfectly over the keeper in an effort to stop it.
I still think Omar Gonzalez is one of the great, great flukes. It's the great, great freak goals.
With Everton, so again, like it's a game where they nearly beat what we consider to be a good opponent. Let's just pretend, like if we were doing another jump to conclusions week now, and my conclusion was Everton will stay up, would you jump now?
I think at the moment, yeah, because there's enough sludge underneath them. But again, there's a panel out there with a verdict that I keep going back to it. That 12 point deduction would change.
Yeah, you're right.
So much. I thought Everton played well in spells, but I thought Matoma in the second half was very, very good. And I suppose Everton defended well to keep them at bay. 1-1 is about right. Lewis Dunk scored an amazing goal that was ruled out for offside. Yeah. Just an amazing vibe. So good. I think it's a good point for Everton.
You know, the thing with Everton in wondering whether or not they're going to stay up, you know, we've continued to say that there's enough bad teams beneath them that could push them up. I will that when we do that, it's not really giving Everton any credit. It's kind of us dancing around the fact that they're terrible, but they may not be the most terrible. Part of me does continue to feel that way. They're not very good, but I want to give them at least a little bit of credit and suggest that their form is not quite as terrible as maybe what we thought it was going to be coming into this season. They're eighth in the Premier League in non-penalty XG. They're seventh in shots on target per 90, but their goals per shot on target is 19th. So when you look at those things, it kind of tells you a couple things. Yes, they're not as ruthless in their finishing as other teams are, but like combining that XG with that number of shots that they put on target, it does tell you that they're also a bit unlucky. And, you know, stats that signify luck one way or another, unlucky or very lucky, they do sometimes have a tendency of evening out. So if Everton do continue to play like this, it's not just that there's a lot of crappy teams beneath them. It is also that if they play this way the rest of the season, they will play their way into not being relegated. It won't just be they're not the most bad. They'll have had a hand in it as well.
Yeah, there's I mean, they're, like you said, not good, but definitely maybe underlying figures. I actually don't know what to say about Everton, honestly. Like you watch them, they're just blah. Right. And hopefully they're not blah enough that they go down. So that's pretty much. You said that was your last thing.
Yeah, I don't have anything else. I know that I did have Villa and Nottingham Forest on here as well. I don't know if you had anything on that.
Yeah, I do. First of all, great win for Nottingham Forest. Villa were flying. That's a significant defeat for them away from home. Andrew, Matt Turner was dropped.
Yeah, that's true.
That is not good. Steve Cooper had this to say, and he said it to Nottingham Live, one of my favorite online publications. Mm. It felt like the right time. We have been pleased with Matt and we have got a strong goalkeeping department, and then we want guys fighting for position, and it's just a change that we feel is the right one to make. That's a word salad for, yeah, we had to get him out. It was the right time to take him out.
It's a bit of a Raya Ramsdale explanation. How can I make this sound as not bad as possible?
Correct. This is a disaster. Now, I've seen him do great things within games and then bafflingly bad things across a few games this season. And I guess they've weighed it up and decided we're better off giving our 29-year-old goalkeeper that we've signed a run ahead of Matt Turner. But our number one is a number two again. And I just don't like that. Don't like it. And it's really, really worrying. And I wonder if he's already eye in January, because they've got the, and also for them to win against quality opposition in the first game he's out in. I don't know. I'm not surprised. If you watched him, you wouldn't be surprised, but I thought they'd hang on a little bit longer because he has made good saves at times.
Yeah, no, it's not what you want. We'll
see.
Good
job we don't have a major tournament next summer. Oh, wait, we do.
Yeah, we'll see if he's able to somehow get his way back into that starting position. Once you lose it, it's hard. It's hard to get that back. You're right. I'm glad you pointed that out. It's not good. That's not good. I'll tell you what, let's on that note, let's go ahead. Let's collect ourselves. We'll take a break. We'll come back on the other side. Still a few things, important things still to get to here on Caught Offside. You're not going to want to miss it. More Caught Offside still to come.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Oh, back now on Caught Offside, JJ. Election Day. We're recording this on the eve of, but it is now Election Day in the United States.
What are we electing?
Where I live, a town mayor.
Oh, okay.
What else? I guess it might vary depending on where you live.
Can I say I don't care about any of that and I want to talk about something different? Is that rude?
Yeah, it is rude. I happen to think Election Day is one of the most important days of the year.
I think it's
an ugly side of you. It's not a side of you I would have expected. You're a very political person.
I am. And I care, and I watch the news, I engage, I read a lot, but
it feels bitter because you can't vote. You're not a citizen yet. Maybe one day. And I feel like I feel like it was a comment that was dripping with bitterness.
No, I can't wait to vote. I can't. Please God, I will be a citizen. I look forward to doing that. And I do care about it. But it's just, I've got something I want to say. Wow. I'm so late to this. It's embarrassing. But after 5 years, I'm finally listening to American Fiasco by Roger Bennett about the 1998 World Cup. It's about way more than that. It's about the team from 94 onwards and just what happened at the Copa America in 95, the road to the World Cup in 1998. I'm three episodes in. It's absolutely brilliant. It is such... I am just imbibing so much of this team. Like years where I didn't know any of this. I couldn't have. I was a teenager. Home in Ireland, and like I knew a lot of US players more than the average person, but I didn't know these stories. It's so good. And I haven't got to the fiasco part yet. Yeah, no, fair well, play.
The fiasco Roger being that tournament itself for the US, because it was
yes,
disastrous. And,
however, then, but no, it's Steve Sampson getting the job. How they finish fourth at Copa America. We would rip off our arms and any other appendage you can think of to get fourth next summer, wouldn't we?
Would I sign up for that right now?
I think we would. Oh, I think we would.
I don't know. I'm not ready to sign that contract.
Okay, all right. But regardless, it's so good. Once you get over the initial, I'm Roger Bennett and I'm going to make it slightly about me before I make it about the podcast.
Oh,
once
wow.
you get over that, it's brilliant. And he's done a great job, I have to say. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. Great job by Roger Bennett and WNYC Studios. This doesn't age. This is U.S. soccer history, and everyone should listen to it.
Far be it from you to make something about yourself. I understand your criticism there.
No, I know myself. I know that I do it.
Oh, okay.
I know who I am, and in many ways, that's quite freeing.
He also did another one of my favorite podcasts that was not Men in Blazers. He did the on the what anniversary was it? Was it 20th anniversary? I forget exactly, but the Band of Brothers podcast. It was basically a rewatch of all 10 parts of Band of Brothers, and for each episode he had on a key member of that episode, a different
That'd be
actor.
Good. I'd watch
it. It was spectacular. If you love Band of Brothers, and I've said before on this podcast, it's my favorite thing ever, whether movie, TV, I don't know what you, it's a miniseries. I don't know what you consider it. It's my favorite thing that I've ever seen. And
I'm doing
the podcast
a rewatch
that he hosted of it. Then you have to listen to the podcast that he did on it in conjunction with you watching it. It's fantastic. You'll love it. You'll honestly love it.
I'm doing a rewatch of Band of Brothers this winter. And,
okay. Well, I highly suggest you do this podcast along with it. So there's there's our ode to Roger Bennett here.
So well done, Roger Bennett.
Yeah, he's doing just fine. JJ, it appears as though no official announcement yet at time of recording, but the U.S. women have their reportedly a new manager. It's a pretty big one. Emma Hayes of Chelsea, pretty significant appointment for the U.S. women. She's been incredibly successful with Chelsea, 6 Women's Super League titles, 5 FA Cups, 2 League Cups, a runners-up in the Champions League. That's been the one big trophy that has eluded her. But for all the success that she has had in England with Chelsea, her history in America runs pretty deep. I'm reading an excerpt here from ESPN FC. I think it was Sophia Lawson that wrote about her. She wrote, having cut her teeth with the Long Island Lady Riders and Iona College in New York, Hayes returned to England as Vic Akers' assistant at Arsenal. Hayes' experiences on the other side of the Atlantic didn't end there. She spent 2 years with Chicago Red Stars. It was so key in her development that she once told Chelsea TV that although she was born in England, she was, quote, definitely made in America. Wow. And now she'll have a chance to come back to America and try to lead this U.S. women's national team out of this kind of wilderness that they're in right now and back to prominence.
Yeah. She also was involved in assembling the Western New York Flash team that won the last WPS championship in 2011. I know she traveled for a remembrance for Tony DiCicco, because I know his family is tweeted about that when they heard she was getting the job. She has serious links here. Bo Dewar does a good article in The Guardian about her. And he thinks she'll benefit from the fact that some of the older, bigger stars have moved on. But he kind of mentions the player power is so big in international football because you can't get rid of the players in international football. Well, I mean, you can drop them, but...
Well, the U.S. has a big player pool.
Yeah. It does, but I mean, I think what's interesting about the U.S. and what became interesting about them was the pool was certain talents over the last 15 years, Andrew. that were there all the time, and thus to the point that it became a salaried job, an international football job where players were paid salaries through. So there is player power, and Bowe outlines that. But there's no one more. I mean, there's very few as qualified as her to take the job. She's a very impressive resume. So I'm excited for this.
Well, she was writing in the Telegraph, JJ, for the Telegraph in England during the Women's World Cup just earlier this year in the summer. And she wrote about this U.S. team. The quote that she had in there was, they are, quote, massively short of creative talent. And, you know,
I mean, how's that going to go over with Trinity Rodman?
Well, we don't know who. I mean, maybe there are some players in there that she views have it, but I don't know. You're right. It may be the whole squad that she thinks they need to be remade in some way.
And they're playing a totally different style of soccer to the rest of the world.
Right. Like and that's what she's saying, that they're, yeah. I don't think that they're quite technical enough for where the rest of the world is at.
Sounds like a familiar conversation we've had.
Well, it's going to be interesting because in this piece at ESPNFC, Sophie Lawson writes that she wrote, from that first Chelsea squad of 22 that Hayes inherited, only 11 players returned to her in 2013, with another 7 let go the following year, as she brought in talent from across the globe to fit her evolving vision, just as she'd tried to do with Chicago Red Stars. Indeed, no player could get too comfortable in a Hayes team. Many who helped deliver Chelsea's first WSL title in 15-16 were soon surplus, as the manager again took the chance to decisively upgrade her squad.
She'll find that won't work here.
Well, we'll see. Now, she can't look. It's obviously, she'll find that international management is far different. Like you said, she can't just go start grabbing players that fit her system. She has a set. There are limitations, obviously, by birth of who she has to work with. But it does tell me that if, you know, there are certain mainstays here, and I don't know who yet until she gets into the side and can observe it firsthand. There may be certain players that you consider a mainstay that she will not. And it seems like she doesn't care. Now, I know you think that the U.S. women's setup is different and she'll have to care and make it work with certain players, but I don't know. She's a giant in this sport in management. And so it'll be interesting to see if she has autonomy. There may be certain names that not what I'm looking for. Moving on.
Weird we'll that you would, I mean, it's some leap to take a job where you've already said they have massive creative deficiencies. That's interesting. And I can't wait to see how she addresses that.
Yeah. Let's see. MLS playoffs, JJ. Actually, they're going on as we speak. I saw that when I last looked, the Houston Dynamo had a 1-0 lead over Real Salt Lake. I wonder if that's still the case. At any rate, while I look that up, RSL won on penalties. This is some great coverage you're getting right now from us here. The New York Red Bulls, JJ. So they lose again. It was horrifying. I don't know. I can't go through chapter and verse of like every team in every sport and what their playoff failures have been. But just
why can't you give it a go?
I can't and I won't. But I'll say this. I don't know how many there can be that are more painful than what the Red Bulls have had. And this is just the latest chapter.
Just think of the penalties. So they're 1-0 up. I think it's a brilliant, it's a very good equalizer on the break from Cincinnati. Of course, led by Acosta. So it's 1-1. They take it to penalties and they have the opportunity to win it with their homegrown talent. John Tolkien puts the ball down, sends the keeper the wrong way, but he hits the post. It's in front of the South Ward as well. Like they get another opportunity to do it again in the same penalty, like in the penalty kicks. They have another opportunity to clutch a victory from the jaws of defeat, and they blow their lines again. Ball is ballooned over the crossbar.
Mm-hmm.
It's worse. Matt Miazga, a product of the region, another homegrown guy, scores his penalty. And then I don't think he was trolling. I think he was serious. And that suggests a man who is very delusional and put in a delusional performance as well. He will miss the next game because of yellow card accumulation.
Terrible, by the way.
Oh, he does a heart signal to the South Ward. No, I love you. I love you. No, no, no. And then all this stuff. I think he meant it. I don't think he was trolling. Referee immediately yellow cards him for that.
You think he meant it in that situation? That's the time to do something like that?
No, I think what he thought was that if he just gave them the heart, that there'd be some kind of... okay, take the other way. He's trolling them there. He knows he's going to get yellow card if he does carded if he does that. Gestures to the fans. 1,000% he's getting a yellow card. So he's either really dumb and thinking it would be well received, or he is actually trolling them and still really dumb because he's going to get a yellow card. Maybe I've long thought he was a bit of an ass.
Wow. And well, what was it? It was in the Gold Cup, right? After a penalty when he screamed, was it against Panama? Wasn't it? In the game that the U.S. eventually lost, he screamed in someone's face after after a penalty.
Yeah, and he did a whole height thing with a Mexican once. He started mocking a Mexican player.
I mean,
height.
Look, I'm...
Oh, you're fine with that.
There are things in this rivalry that, like, ridiculous stuff happens.
Cincinnati, then when Cincinnati win it, they celebrate in front of the South Ward. And they get pelted with bottles.
Yeah.
What are you expecting?
Well, I don't want to excuse that.
No, I'm excusing it.
Wow.
I'm absolutely excusing it.
No. I can't. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I am. In this instance, I am.
Yell at
him. What the hell are you doing? Antagonizing the crowd like that.
Can't throw a bottle. Can't do it, man. I don't care what they just won a hard-fought playoff matchup in penalties. They can celebrate how they want to celebrate. It doesn't justify throwing a bottle at them. Curse at them, whatever. You want to yell, scream, get angry. Give them the finger. I don't care. You can't throw a bottle. You can't
do
it.
There's beer is coming.
I've been to hundreds of sporting events in my life. I've seen players taunt the fans in many, many ways. I've never had the urge to throw a bottle at them. You keep it together, dude. You can't do it. Cannot do it.
Well, there was more than one object thrown on the field, and I have no problem with it.
That's a shocking take.
It's not like when Tadi Castellanos was caught off guard celebrating a goal.
No, I understand. I understand what you're saying.
And someone threw a beer at him, threw a can at him. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, he didn't know where it was coming from. It cracks him on the side of the head. That's disgraceful. It's not right. You are walking towards these people and you are deliberately taunting them. Not one, but the entire Cincinnati squad. And they don't expect some objects to be thrown at them.
There's nothing you could say to me right now that I'll say, yeah, you know what? Have at it. Throw bottles. I can't get to that place.
I'm not saying I don't condone. I shouldn't say I condone it. I shouldn't. I understand it. I'll put it that way.
So FC Cincinnati.
To your house tomorrow morning. You open that front door. Oh, what a fresh morning. And crack. Going to hit you with a coffee cup.
Nothing I've done on this podcast has ever warranted such behavior, and I won't have it, and I'll have the police on standby. So FC Cincinnati, they do move on. However, their counterpart, the other one seed, we talked about this the other night, that when we were discussing of the teams that had gone down 1-0, who was most likely to turn it around, we did not identify St. Louis City as one of those. We thought Sporting Kansas City looked pretty comprehensive. And sure enough, they finished the job. And Logan Ndembe, who has never scored for Sporting Kansas City, has now scored again in both the first two games of this matchup in this first round. And so the eight seed is moving on, and the one seed is gone. Still a great debut season for St. Louis. I can't say I have my finger on the pulse of how their fans are feeling about this. I'm sure they're obviously frustrated and extremely disappointed to have lost and lost to a rival as well. But in their inaugural season to have gotten a one seed.
I think it's desperately disappointing. And knowing their supporters and listening to them online, they're very, very delighted with the season they've had, or were delighted with the season they've had. Why wouldn't they be? Being one of the top teams in the country in the regular season, and then to go in and just absolutely wet fart it in the playoffs. That's, That's disappointing, but they'll get over it. That's they built a nice little club there. They'll be fine. But now, go on. This game, LAFC and Vancouver. Wow, yeah. What a finish.
LAFC, they bounce Vancouver 1-0. Kind of a wild stoppage time to this one, JJ.
Absolutely. And it all culminated in the Vancouver manager, Vanni Sartini, losing his mind. It was a wonderful show of absolute rage. Sartini was sent off, and he storms off down the tunnel. Literally seconds left in the game. Then he comes back out onto the field and he shakes hands aggressively with everyone. Opposition players, opposition coaches, his own players, Chiellini. And it's almost as if I will make friends with everyone. I will be magnanimous because I'm about to destroy the referees. Sartini said at the end, we didn't have a fair chance, to be honest. It's because today, unfortunately, the referee had the bad game. With Vancouver pushing for a last gasp equalizer that would have forced penalty kicks, I'm reading from MLSsoccer.com, in match two, a bizarre sequence unfolded deep into second half stoppage time. It was crazy. So there was a Vancouver corner was cleared. The referee collided with Whitecaps midfielder Alessandro Schopp near the top of the 18-yard box. Carlos Vela charged down the field and Dennis Bouanga scored the apparent 2-0 clincher, but it was called back for offside following video review. And Sartini lost his mind over this. Just absolutely lost his mind. It was hilarious watching him. I can't remember the last time I've seen a coach incensed like that, and he delivered it with such passion.
I don't know what the ruling can be here. And I guess it was kind of a ball don't lie situation in that the goal was ultimately ruled for offside. But like a season cannot be allowed to end on a referee colliding with a player and that then creating a breakaway going the other direction. Like for that to happen in stoppage time of a one goal game as Vancouver is desperately pushing for, like, I do get his anger. I don't know what's supposed to happen there.
But they reversed it. I mean, it ended.
But 1-0. Not because of that, just out of sheer happenstance. It was crazy. It was a wild.
I mean, he had a lot of other complaints about the game as well, which, whatever. It was just funny to see him so mad and so angry. And LAFC roll on and maybe not. Didn't look their best in that game. Don't think they love playing on that turf in that stadium. Atmosphere was amazing there, though, I must say. I'd love if they just put grass down there.
Yeah.
I don't like it. I'm always worried. So that was that. So the MLF playoffs run on interminably.
Let's see. A couple other notes before we get out, JJ, from over the weekend. Bayern Munich smashed Borussia Dortmund. Harry Kane continues to dominate.
Look at what I'm wearing.
Oh, you got it. You had talked about the mid-90s Dortmund tracksuit jacket that you were awaiting. Is that it?
What do you think?
I can't see. Your camera is like tilted so far up. I can't really see it. Oh, it's actually beautiful. Again, you know my policy on this. I would just personally feel weird wearing it, not being a fan of the club. But you have no shame. So you know.
No, I like sports history and I like.
Oh, nice whoa, things. Whoa. Come on now. That's unfair.
Sorry, I like sports history memorabilia, I should say. I like this Dortmund team. That was a bloody good Dortmund team. I'll tell you what, that Dortmund team wouldn't continue to get absolutely pumped by their rival. And I'm telling you now, Derek Ray, come at me. Bundesliga officials, get over here. The whole of Germany, I will take you on. You're not allowed to call this Der Klassiker anymore. It should be called Der Pumpengamen.
Derek Ray, come at me. Oh, look out. He's lurking.
Yeah, Klassiker. No, 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 Derek. They're pumping gaming.
So,
the way I said that is problematic.
With this one, obviously 4-0. I mean, yes, it was.
Did you catch
it,
that? You caught that.
They're pumping gamer. But some of the excitement of this took place afterwards. When
I didn't see it, I turned it off. I have to say, I turned it off and I put on Newcastle Arsenal.
But you wouldn't have seen it because it happened with the Sky Sports Germany broadcast. So after the match, Thomas Tuchel was interviewed pitch side by the Sky Sports Germany broadcasters that were there. This is all, you can see it online. It's all in German, but you can find the English subtitles. And he shows up ready for a fight because Sky Sports German broadcasters and former legends, Lothar Matthäus and Didi Hamann, of course, they've been highly critical of Tuchel. Now, on this pitch side broadcast, Hamann wasn't there, but Matthäus was. And immediately, I mean, Tuchel, he was ready. He was ready for a fight. And the interview, it started contentious. Then it kind of crested and it seemed like, okay, maybe we're going to be okay here. But then at the end, it got ugly again. And it ended prematurely with Tuchel storming off. He takes his headset off. He says to them, when they started to, I guess, slant a little bit negative with Bayern and having lost to a third tier side a week ago, he says to them, "You have your job. You can say whatever you want. There's nothing more for me to say. Nobody's mad. We won 4-0. Now you have to do a 180 degree turn. Have fun." And he takes his headset off and he storms away. You should see it. It's worth seeing. But so I just wonder, in thinking about it, like, I guess I, Tuchel, I understand why he would feel this way. They just won 4-0. He's probably tired of it. But I do think criticism, it's not totally unfounded. Like, Bayern, they're second in the league right now. It's not terrible, but it's not what you come to expect from Bayern. They've just lost in the cup to a third tier side.
Right.
They are top of the group in the Champions League, 3 wins from 3 games. But last year, remember, he took over. He got knocked out of the DFB Pokal immediately by Freiburg, got beat by Manchester City in the quarters of the Champions League, and won the Bundesliga, but he did so by one of the most narrow margins we've ever seen. He's not free of criticism.
I'm watching it here without the sound. The presenter just looks at Matthäus. Matthäus just looks at the presenter before they even start talking, and they can see this guy who's... Tuchel's tall, man.
He's very tall, yeah.
He's just ready to go.
He showed up ready. He came ready for a fight.
He came ready for a very firm handshake in which he spins around with someone. Is it even a year since that happened? It's over a year, right?
Probably right around a year. Wow. Yeah. Jeez, that could have been 10 years ago. Good Lord. Yeah. The Tuchel Conte handshake was last season.
Yeah.
Oh my God. But at any rate, not to make this just about Tuchel, that was just an interesting visual and weird, horribly uncomfortable interaction. But Harry Kane again, oh my God, a hat trick, first player in Bundesliga history with 15 goals in his opening 10 matches. Didn't age well. Eden Terzic of Borussia Dortmund had said prior to the match that he was confident that Dortmund could keep Kane in check. Narrator
dropped off.
They did not. Kane has taken this league by storm. He's incredible. And Bayern are still not quite where they want to be. They're second behind Leverkusen, but they're trimming the gap a little. We'll see. The top of the Bundesliga is very interesting right now. It looks like it's going to be a fun race between those two. And then finally, JJ, to close out the Copa Libertadores final, was over the weekend, and it is Fluminense who defeat Boca Juniors to win a thrilling and highly, highly emotional Copa Libertadores final, where Marcelo of Brazilian and Real Madrid fame, who grew up, he was Fluminense, that was his club, and now he's gone back and plays for them. And he said afterwards that this triumph meant more to him than any of the Champions Leagues that he had won at Real Madrid.
Yeah, I believe it. He seems to have such a connection to the club. I don't know if I'd say it was a thrilling game. I mean, it was a tough watch for a lot of it, but the goals were very good. And Kennedy's winner, John Kennedy's winner, was...
You like that, don't you?
I do like that. Play the Sopranos drop, please.
I'm supposed to be impressed because the man's name is John Kennedy.
Uncle Junior's obsession with John Kennedy always confounded Tony. Yeah, I mean, the winning goal was great. The three goals in the game were very, very good. We took Roisin to watch it. So I was desperate to get out and see the second half. And I knew the Black Horse would have it on Fifth Avenue. I just guaranteed they'd have it on. And so Darcy gets back and I say, God, you know, I think I need to take the child for a walk. And Darcy goes, really? I'm like, yeah, just maybe about a 45-minute walk. Should be about right. So I bring Roisin out, and Roisin's such a trooper. She's great with people. She's already smiling at everyone, but like, I could tell she was getting a bit cranky. So I had to go before extra time. And I got back, and I don't have Phil Shane and BN Sports on my TV at home. So I actually missed extra time and the drama that ensued. I've two last things, and I'll make them quick before we get out. The first one is Phil Neville has been announced as the new manager of the Portland Timbers. That's incredible to me. He is the most employable man in football. It doesn't matter what he's done beforehand, he will get a job. So I'm not sure that the Timbers Army will greet this. I know some of the supporters organizations had objections to him based on some comments he made about women footballers and women in general in the past, tweeted rather. But he's in. And so we will see another chapter in Phil Neville's amazing coaching career. He is never without work. He doesn't need ZipRecruiter or anybody. He will always have a job. And on a personal note, our center forward, our talismanic number nine, Javier from my club, Joa, he got just a terrible injury at the weekend, dislocated knee.
Oh,
yeah. I feel responsible because the collision that it happened from, I put him on the slower of the center backs, or I wanted him to go the slower of the center backs. And I instructed our midfielder, Rob, to spin a ball into him because I knew Javi is quick and he'd beat him. I knew he'd have this guy on toast. Unfortunately, this guy dives in, Javi's foot gets either jammed in the turf or whatever. And his knee it was not good, but we're sending our love and our prayers out to him and being in touch with him. I know a lot of the guys have been just get well soon, Javi. He's a great old school Argentinian center forward, and I hope he comes back and he's able to play again.
Ah, that's awful. And you are complicit.
Yeah, you're blaming me.
You are complicit. I'm not saying it's your fault, but if we are ranking people who are in some way involved with this, you are on the list. I don't know how far down we have to go, but you are on the list somewhere.
Yeah, I wanted our other striker, Andreas, to pick up the quick center half because Andreas isn't that quick, but Javi is quick on the slow one. And the incident occurred almost immediately after I told Rob to play that ball in. And I take responsibility. But on a serious note, Andrew,
it's awful. It's
terrible. And wish him the best. He's truly a great guy. Yeah. Thoughts.
Get well soon, with him. That sounds pretty bad. Yeah. That's one of those injuries though, that I don't like thinking about how that probably feels.
No, he was a trooper. A lot of pain. Yeah. A lot of pain.
All right. Well, hopefully this podcast didn't bring you all a lot of pain. That's our goal every time we set out.
I guarantee you, we said enough at the start of this podcast. We're going to get it from everyone.
We have probably incensed. I would guess there will be some angry commentary coming from Chelsea supporters, probably Arsenal supporters. The way you kind of blew off Manchester City's 6-1 win, there may be some annoyance coming from them. I would think who else did we probably piss off tonight? I mean, your acceptance, FC Cincinnati fans will probably not be thrilled with you.
I mean, all seven of them are going to be very upset.
Wow. Now that's ridiculous.
That's unfair. They do have great supporters. And I was an early champion of them, Andrew, when they played in the...
Yeah, sounds like
college,
it.
In that college stadium. Check the tape. The tape that ESPN have destroyed, but check it.
Let's cut this off now before we incense more people. JJ, I enjoyed this very much. To you, I say...
Check you later, phone boy.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.